back to Anime Death Spiral, the only anime podcast that comes in five delicious flavors: apple, banana, green pear, moss, and disappointment. That last one is probably our most popular flavor.
Did we discontinue blue?
Yeah, the tariffs. Oh. The tariffs just made it too expensive to get the dye.
Couldn't get the dye anymore. Damn it.
Yeah. We really prided ourselves on getting that good Canadian dye.
I really liked blue. I think blue is probably the best color of food.
Objectively, it's better than red. I'll say it without any hesitation.
Yeah, of course it's better than red. What does red have? Strawberry?
Fruit punch.
Pepper.
Which is like such a cop-out.
Fruit punch.
Yeah, well, the greatest sin from red is cinnamon, which is the all-time worst candy flavor.
I don't know about that. Big Red, if you're reminding me of Big Red, then I might have to actually change my opinion.
You like that?
I like that.
Oh,
also,
God.
Red licorice.
Well,
that shit's dope.
You mean red vines?
Yeah.
No.
Well, it is red licorice.
I have never been a fan of red vines. I'm a Twizzler guy.
Oh, well, those are the most disgusting candy. Now we really are coming to an impasse.
This may end the show, folks.
We will come to blows if you continue this line. Insisting that Twizzlers are good.
Oh, man. So, news, right? There's got to be news
there's
happening.
There's lots of news. Oh, boy. There sure are some news happening. There's a lot of it, actually.
Yeah, tons of it.
Yeah.
Heaping piles of news.
So much. There's so much news. It's insane. I do want to address something. Speaking of news, there is something that I wanted to address.
Oh, thank God.
Last time I did talk about, what's his dopey-ass name? Jordan Vogt Roberts?
Yeah, Jordan Vogt Roberts.
Yeah, you remember we were clowning on him a little bit because he was the guy out here saying, oh, I'm going to make the Metal Gear Solid movie. I'm going to make the live-action Gundam movie.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
And I did make a very declarative statement that that's not going to happen. And I just wanted to clear up any confusion because they did make a huge point this week of announcing this live-action Gundam movie is in current production with the newly established Bandai Namco American Filmworks, co-partnering with Legendary. And I just wanted to make sure that people understand that I said specifically with Jordan Vogt Roberts, specifically him. They got Jim Mickle from that Sweet Tooth Netflix show. He's going to be leading it. So I just want, in case anyone was coming for me, I wanted to make that clear. Yes, they are doing a live action movie. No, it is not going to be Jordan. Jordan loses yet again.
Sorry, Jordan.
Sorry, Jordo.
We're going with the mixer on this one.
Hey, look, Mick, everybody loved that Sweet Tooth show. They had to give it up.
Yeah.
Obviously, watching Sweet Tooth, you're like, oh, this guy would be great for the big robots.
Do you think any of the robots are going to have, like, deer heads or something like that? Maybe, like, antlers?
Dog, have you ever seen a Gundam? They all have antlers.
You call them the head V antlers. I think it's more of antennae, you know?
You think those are the antennae?
Yeah. You know, they're vaguely bug-coated. I think that that's what they're going for, you know?
Sure. I mean, people will be like, it's a samurai helmet. It's a samurai helmet. But come on, man.
No, they're bug heads. They're big old bug
heads.
They're
bug heads. You ever seen Beetleborg?
Oh, dude, I was a Beetleborg kid. You know, obviously, I had a deep love as a 7-year-old child of American bastardizations of tokusatsu series. Beetleborgs, gotta love the Power Rangers. That's the OG. Yeah, I was in for them all. Basically, those two. I think the genre is consists of just those two.
Sure, you're in the tank for the Power Rangers, and yet you did refrain from watching the Power Rangers Isekai that came out this season. Curious.
That has more to do with my absolute allergic disgust towards Isekai than it does towards Power Rangers.
Okay.
Let's be honest. And I want to clarify, I was not into Super Sentai Tokusatsu, I was very specifically into the American Power Rangers, which did have their own B stories going on when the cast was sans costume.
Sure, sure. The ooze and whatnot.
Sure. Rita Repulsa, you know, and Lord
it's
Zed.
It's very rude, by the way. That's a very rude name. She's perfectly fine.
Yeah, you know, she's an older lady of her time, refined in her wear, and she just wants to end the world from the safety of the moon. That's her whole thing.
Yeah, which, frankly, these days, hard to disagree.
Hard to argue with.
To argue, you know? I don't know. Where are the Power Rangers now? I don't see them around.
There's no giant robots coming to save us, unfortunately.
Yep. So why were the, not to go down this hole, but why were the Beetleborgs, like, primarily stationed in a haunted house?
I have no idea. That
what
was
up with that?
Entirely an invention of the American production, like, side of things, as far as I can tell.
Was it?
Well, okay, hold on. A couple things.
Oh, okay.
not just the haunted house. There's a couple things, some very choice decisions they made. One, the three main characters in their human form are all like 12-year-old kids. Not the case.
Yeah.
Not the case in the Japanese version. I came to find out they were, you know, adults, teenagers, if you will, but adults.
Yeah, they're pretty tall for kids.
You know, the three kids, they spend their time hanging out in a dilapidated house in the woods that's haunted by a ghost that is very strongly Liberace-coded. Do you remember that?
I don't remember the Liberace angle. I do remember thinking, is this like a leftover set from Goosebumps? Is that what's happening here? Or Alone in the Dark or something?
Oh, I bet it absolutely was a leftover set from Goosebumps.
Yeah.
Yeah. Where else are you going to find a haunted house in the woods at this time of year, in this time of the this part of the world?
Yeah, localized entirely in a Nickelodeon show.
Hey, Fox Kids, get it straight.
Oh, Fox Kids, yes. Hey, I've said many times, I did not have television as a kid, so I missed out on all this shit. I watched Extreme Home Makeover on the fucking bunny ears on the little tiny TV I'd snuck into the house.
He was a very troubled child from an early age.
It's true. Anyway, that was my piece of news. I just wanted to make that clear about the Gundam thing.
Okay.
As we ramp into new Gundam fever.
Yeah, getting ready for G-Quacks.
Very excited for G-Cucks. I've seen the fan art has been rolling in like crazy.
I'm still banking on that Duck Gundam reveal. It's got to be coming.
Well, yeah, I mean, we are so close, and I'm really trying hard not to get spoiled on it, but it is pretty clear that they are riffing on G Gundam, you know, with the tournament and all that, so it's not outside of the realm of possibility.
I mean, I'm okay with that, because as I've said before, like, G Gundam is a great example of, like, where the franchise can go when it's not being so self-serious. Not to say that, you know, themes of wartime horror and political machinations aren't a tried and true formula.
You didn't like the Vietnam allegories? That wasn't your favorite Gundam?
Well, you can only do it for so many series before it gets a little bit passe. That's all I'm saying. As an American, like, come on, we're over Vietnam. You guys should get over
sure.
it too.
What if they had done Gundam, but sort of a G Gundam tone, like sort of kind of fun action-y, but they had done it in the style of MASH, where it's sort of like a Korean War thing just happening in the background of like a goofy Gundam show?
Yeah, it could be about, whatever the Gundam equivalent of Hawkeye is, and he's smuggling space gin behind the the colonial army's back or whatever.
Oh yeah, absolutely. They could have radar. His antenna could be huge.
He could be an actual radar.
He's got a radar dish. That's his Gundam.
Yeah, this thing writes itself, honestly.
I know. This is all so obvious. Well, I don't know.
My favorite thing about G Gundam was always the fact that the Gundams had costumes, which was so incredibly campy and fun. Like, it's everyone had specific, like, cultural, nation-themed costumes for their Gundams.
Yes.
That's the best thing. I love that. Especially,
Sombrero.
boxing-coated American Gundam.
Yes, boxing Gundam.
Mike Tyson Gundam.
I think it would have been Muhammad Ali Gundam, but sure.
Sure.
Mike Tyson's in the news, so that's also news.
Yeah, I'm just trying to keep it relevant for our Gen Z listeners.
Sure. Well, here's a good jumping-off point, because giant robots, right?
Yep, love them.
Well, have you considered this? You ever think about this?
Hmm? Oh?
Giant Robo.
Oh, Giant Robo, huh?
You ever think about that?
I remember Giant Robo.
Yeah, Giant Robo. He's a giant robot, as the name implies.
Uh-huh. And what's up with him?
Well, Giant Robo was written by Mitsutero Yokoyama. I hope that's right. I think that's right. And he wrote something that I had read this week and wanted to talk about. Pretty slick, right? Pretty
nice. Slick. That was seamless.
That's pretty good.
Absolutely, absolutely flawless transition.
Yeah, well, he did. I mean, he really did write Giant Robo. He really did that.
And we all thank him for it. Thanks.
Yeah, well, everybody loves Giant Robo. I mean, come on. Giant Robo is why Gundam exists.
What is that the...
That's true.
What was the Japanese title? Tetsujin something... Something or other.
Tetsujin what? Tetsujin 28 or something like that?
Yeah.
Because he was 28 miles tall.
28 miles?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know how tall he was supposed to be.
He towered above mountains.
Yeah, he was as tall as Mount Fuji. I'm pretty sure.
Are you trying to say 28 meters? Which, you know, are communist miles?
Who knows? I have no clue. I don't speak Japanese, as I've made it clear many times on this show.
And I refuse to learn.
He was pretty big, though. He was definitely really big. And he was basically the inspiration for every giant robot. That was back in Tezuka days.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, that, you know, Tezuka introduced the concept of robots being very small.
Yeah, little boy robots.
Yeah, which is something that unfortunately never took off. Gundam did try to do it. They had that Gundam SD series. Remember that one? Where all the Gundams were like small little robot people?
Yes, I do. I despise the Gundam SDs. I hate them. They're awful. I hate them.
It is a choice to remove the human agency from the Gundams, I guess.
Oh, that's your problem? That they're personified?
Yeah. I think it takes away from the horror of them being essentially super weapons that always fall into the worst hands, right? If you make them a cute little robot guy who doesn't have a human pilot inside of him.
Yeah, and his pilot is just his best friend, which is a 9-year-old child.
What if they were more like drones and the kid had like a, you know, a drone controller pad where he controlled the little Gundams with? They were fully conscious.
You're talking about Robot Wars.
Oh, man, I love Robot Wars. It's so fucking cool.
Yeah, you're just going to Robot Wars again. You're just driving us back to Robot Wars.
Damn it.
The point being, the man created Giant Robo, but he also created a few other things. I mean, if we're being generous, he kind of sort of invented supernatural ninja manga as well.
Oh,
he wrote one of the first like super ninja comics. It was called Kamen no Ninja Akakage, and it was all about basically teenage ninjas using superpowers to kick each other's asses.
Were they turtles?
They were not turtles. This was before any kind of turtle ninjas. They were still human back in I want to say like 1960, maybe 65, something like that.
Okay.
We were still experimenting with the form back there, you know?
Well, as a weird, awkward teenager once myself. I thank him for his contribution to my personality.
Absolutely.
I like anime about ninja teens fighting each other. Super ninja teens.
Yeah.
Turtle or otherwise.
He did one other thing that I find is incredibly influential on a lot of manga even to this day. Well, he did a few other things. He did a lot of stuff, but the one I want to talk about, because it's the one I read, is called Babel 2. You ever heard of Babel 2?
The Brad Pitt movie.
Oh God. Was that Brad Pitt in that movie?
Yeah, that was Brad Pitt.
Oh.
They obviously couldn't get him back for Babel 2, the relanguaging, but you know, he was in the first one for sure.
He's such a fucking dork. God damn. You remember when he cameos in 12 Years a Slave because he produced it and he shows up as the non-racist Canadian white man? He's the one non-racist white guy in the whole movie.
He comes in and his only line is, "Hey, I'm one of the good ones."
I'm one of the good ones. He's beautiful. He's got like this long, beautiful wig on. God, what a hokey, fucking corny ass motherfucker.
What a dork.
Like, come on, man. Anyway, Mitsuteru Yokoyama also wrote Babel 2, which is a mid to late 60s comic about a superpower immortal boy who essentially declares war on the CIA, which fucking absolutely whips. That fucking kicks so much ass. It's so cool. And I don't even mean that in the general way where we're maybe poking fun a little bit. No, in the comic, he explicitly declares war on the CIA by name.
Jeez.
Yeah.
What did they do to him? Kill his family?
Well, they imprisoned his giant robots.
Oh, yeah. They'll do that.
They stole his giant robots and put him underground.
Now,
fucking assholes.
Now, not to be pedantic, but if this were a real scenario, would not the acquisition of the giant robots fall under military jurisdiction?
No. I mean, they are intelligence assets at that point, because the CIA doesn't want anybody to know about immortals or giant robots or aliens. You know, a general military branch wouldn't have access to that level of intelligence.
Hmm.
So obviously it's got to be CIA controlled. Because that's where the Men in Black live.
And where do the...
Oh,
no, you didn't mention the Men in Black.
Did I mention the Men in Black? Yeah,
no.
They're real, and they're in the story.
And they're called the Men in Black?
They're called the Men in Black, yeah. And some of them are robots.
Is Will Smith there?
I haven't seen a black one, unfortunately. No, none of the Men in Black are actually black. So they're all various shades of white guy. But they're in there. They're in there doing CIA shit.
I mean, that is pretty accurate for most alphabet agencies.
At the very least, their portrayal in popular TV shows, that's for sure.
Yeah.
No shade to Scully and Mulder, obviously. What can you do? Their agency was only two people.
And, you know, to be fair, they spend like a good chunk of that series not even working for the FBI anymore. They go rogue. They get fired. You know, it happens all the time.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's hard to blame them, right? They were cranks.
Yeah.
They were cranks.
Yeah, I really like that episode where it pulled out and revealed that they're in an insane asylum, and all of the episodes before that were just their hallucinations and schizophrenic ramblings.
Mulder is staring into a snow globe that's got, like, yeah, the Animal Man in it.
No, it has the Fox 20th Century logo in it.
Anyway, this is a fairly influential manga. They did many, many runs and then sequel runs and then multiple different anime and a live action version.
They did a Babel 3, a Babel 4, Babel Returns, The Babel, which was the soft reboot.
Well, his name is Babel 2. His actual name is Babel 2.
Oh,
his name is that. And
okay,
it's not because there's like some clever thing. It's because his brother was born before him. So that's Babel 1. And he was born and he became Babel 2.
They couldn't even just change one letter?
No, they couldn't change a single letter. They both had to be Babel for some reason.
It would be so disheartening to grow up in that situation, to just be like, oh, yeah, they couldn't think of another one. I'm just I'm just two.
I'm Babel two.
Yeah, I'm Babel two. He's Babel one.
He's Babel one. But he does kick Babel one's ass like a bunch of times.
Is Babel one working for the CIA?
No, I don't really understand the connection there, because I ended up reading, for the most part, I ended up reading the 2010 sequel series called Babel 2, The Returner, which I found fascinating almost from page one, because first of all, it's sort of in the Dark Knight, like, gritty reboot vein, except it is a direct sequel.
Uh-huh.
So there's lots of, like, you know, military stuff in it, overly complex and realistic, like, military operations and jargon and stuff. There are, like, multiple exquisitely drawn Blackhawks in the first chapter, so you know what we're dealing with here.
Sure.
But within 10 pages, Babel 2 expands his reach further than the original series could have ever possibly comprehended. When the Babel 2 character stands in the top of, like, Tokyo Tower and declares he is going to war with all of America. And then America proceeds to do, like, multiple 9/11s throughout Tokyo with their fucking Blackhawks. It's insane. This is one of the most insane things I have ever read.
That sounds awesome.
It is awesome. And it is also, like, overtly about Japan's covert desire to shake off America's military dominance over their entire country.
Yeah, they'd like that, wouldn't they?
It's pretty intense. I don't think I've ever read a comic that was so explicitly about anti-American sentiment in Japan.
Well, you don't get more explicit than having the main character unilaterally declare war on the U.S. Yeah, by himself.
On the entirety of the United States military, and probably most of the civilian population, but I'm sure there's some good people mixed in there.
They're not sending their best.
Yeah, it's really great. It's cool as hell, and its politics are incredible. They're not necessarily coherent, but you know, it is a manga.
Yeah, but I think that's forgivable considering just everything. Coherency is unfortunately lacking in most aspects of reality at this point.
Yeah, well, and of course, I'm never going to accuse a manga of failing to live up to its political objectives. It seems unfair. But there are multiple, I mean, for instance, there are multiple panels where, like, a newscaster in Japan is like, my God, these American Black Hawk helicopters are shooting openly into Japanese skyscrapers. What is this, Iraq or Lebanon?
Wow, like, oh, boy. No need to throw shade like that. Come on.
All right. Damn, dude. And then it cuts to Babel 2, and he's like, my name is Babel 2, and me and my giant robots declare war on America.
Now, how many giant robots does he have?
He has two giant robots and a shape-shifting jaguar. That's his team.
Okay, I'm going to need some more information on that last one. That's a bit of an outlier, it seems.
It's not a giant robot. You'd think, like, three is the magic number.
Is it a regular-sized jaguar?
It's a regular-sized jaguar, but it does change shape.
Jaguar.
A jaguar. It's pretty sick. He's like goo, but he usually takes the shape of a jaguar.
Can he take the shape of a car, specifically a jaguar?
I think that would be a little on the nose. You know, this is trying to be serious. This is a serious manga about...
Oh, okay. Sorry. I didn't mean to lessen the seriousness of the situation here with my with my jokes and japes about the jaguar.
Yeah, I mean, this is a comic that at one point reveals that the 33rd president of the United States, Harry S. Truman, of course, is a psychic alien from outer space and is leading the cabal of space aliens that have taken over the CIA and, by extension, the world.
Okay. All right. This is very similar to, you remember I was talking about that giant robo World War II anime, where with the steampunk robots, where it's revealed that, you guessed it, the entire German high command, including Hitler, are actually evil space aliens.
Yes, I do. Unfortunately, I do remember that. Yes,
it feels like a little bit of a cop out to like, oh no, the CIA isn't evil. It's the evil aliens that are actually controlling them. The institution itself, uncorrupted, is a positive thing.
Oh no, the manga does not say that. The manga explicitly says like the CIA and by extension, most American institutions are unbelievably corrupt and anti-Japanese at their core.
Well, sure.
Which is, you know, again, an incredible statement for a manga to make in 2010.
I mean, they're not wrong.
I mean, it's hard to argue, right?
Yeah, you can't argue with that.
The regular military in the comic is not, like, controlled by aliens. They are just the American military, and they do...
they're still just dicks.
Yeah, they're still the American military, and in the comic, they do, without question... slaughter thousands of Japanese civilians in their attempt to kill one immortal boy. It's pretty brutal.
Do we ever get a reveal of behind the secrecy of his immortality?
Yeah, it turns out that he was created by the Tower of Babel, which was an ancient supercomputer, in order to defend the Earth from, you know, various threats like Babel 1 and these aliens, I guess.
Wait, so... the Tower of Babel created some kind of avatar being to enforce its will on Earth, and then just named it Babel?
Yeah, I know. It's not particularly imaginative.
It's not really that creative. You know, you'd think an ancient supercomputer would be able to think up something with a little bit of flair.
Yeah, I guess it was a really self-absorbed supercomputer.
Maybe it considered them extensions of itself?
That could be it. I mean, the kid begins life as sort of, you know, it's kind of one of those plots where he starts off life as a boy named Koichi who's unaware of his epic destiny until, like, all of his memories return. So in a way, it is sort of like, oh, there's, like, a sort of ego implanted into this extension of a supercomputer. So maybe you could look at it that way. But he does babble. He does battle Babel 2. No, Babel 1 for supremacy of the Earth. So I don't really understand why he would create two of them and then one of them would be bad. That seems weird.
Yeah, it seems like something a supercomputer, especially an ancient one, should be able to, you know, predict.
Yeah.
Possibly not do. Like, hey, have you tried just not fucking up the first time?
Yeah, why didn't you just make the first one good?
Or why didn't you just make the first one have the power of both of them? Huh? Just make one really good one instead of two mediocre ones that have to fight each other.
Well, they're not mediocre. I mean, these guys kick ass. They've got, like... almost unlimited power. They're immortal. They have like crazy psychic powers. They can even like materialize matter. They could pretty much do anything.
Okay, they're little god kids.
Yeah. In fact, one of their favorite moves is to just explode their own bodies at like 6,000 degree temperatures, just to kill everyone and everything around them. It's a pretty sick move.
Yeah, I wonder where they picked that one up from, Mr. President Truman.
Mr. Truman. Yeah, oh, believe me, they talk about nukes, like, a lot in this comic. Like, a lot.
Oh, they talk about it.
They explicitly talk about the U.S. nuking Japan, like, multiple times throughout this comic. It's wild. This shit is wild, man.
So, he has these crazy god powers, but also needs two giant robots... and a shape-shifting jaguar.
To declare war on the United States? Yeah, I mean, he's only one dude. He has crazy powers, but he's not, like, creating clones of himself. He's still got to have backup.
You just said that he could materialize anything that he wants.
Yeah, but life is sacred. You can't create that with your mind. That's out of bounds, man.
Okay, all right. So, recommend Babel 2, then?
Yeah, this shit fucking whips. Also, it's manga history, you know? It's like one of those things. Everybody, you know, in the 60s, obviously, is dominated by Tezuka. I mean, he is the giant. Mm-hmm. He is the god, the manga god. But it's easy to forget that there are other guys out there like Mitsuteru Yokoyama doing the work, inspiring the future of manga, or like, Go Nagai, of course, was around the same time. I think he was in the 60s, right? Maybe the 70s?
Yeah, 60s, 60s, 70s, yeah.
Yeah, he was doing this shit. Devilman. Still, like, some of the dopest shit. That fucking Netflix Devilman is probably one of the best anime in, like, the last 10 years. Oh, God, now I'm doubting myself. Did that come out in the last 10 years?
Devilman Crybaby?
Yeah.
That was 2018.
Oh, thank God. I don't understand time anymore.
Yeah, time is meaningless. It's made up. Like money.
Time and money. Both meaningless. Yeah, that Devilman Crybaby, we've probably said it 7 or 8 times already, but who boy, that is the good stuff. That's the juice.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yuasa just out here like racking dubs every single day. The man is unstoppable.
Sayansaru, we owe you a lot.
Yeah. He's barely even involved in Dandadan, and that is like what, the best thing? In anime right now?
I mean, especially since Dungeon Meshi is not on air currently, but yeah, I mean, I think the fact that we're living in an era of anime excellence where Trigger and Sayansaru are producing two of the better manga into some of the best anime. Yeah, I'll take a lot of slop coming out right now to put up with until those come out, because those make it all worth it.
Well, speaking of the 70s, let's jump over to the 80s really quick, because I did also read the Nightmare on Elm Street manga finally.
Oh, you found it?
Yeah, I found it. I read that shit.
Oh.
Now, it is only 48 pages, so calling it abridged would be a bit of an understatement.
Yeah, it's more of a like a Gold Spine picture book version of the movie.
You know what? It could have been, back in the day, they would give you pamphlets when you went and saw a movie.
Oh, yeah. I've actually got a Japanese like movie pamphlet that they gave out for the release of L.A. Confidential. That thing is absolutely fascinating to flip through.
That's a really strange choice for a movie to do a manga about. That is weird.
Well, it's not a manga. It's just making of behind the scenes kind of thing.
Oh.
That they gave out at the premiere of the movie in Japan.
I see.
Which I was at. I was personally invited to.
Oh, of course. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You were 4 years old, but I was thinking more of like, maybe you don't know this, but when The Lighthouse came out, they had a Lighthouse manga.
I gotta find that.
Yeah, it's fucking great. Manga Willem Dafoe, manga Robert Pattinson. That's the good shit.
I mean, Willem Dafoe's face is already cartoonish to begin with.
He translates very well to the page. You know what I mean?
Yeah. He's an artist's dream.
Anyway, this could have been a pamphlet. That's how brief it is and how abridged it is. It's still fairly faithful to the movie. You know, the characters are sort of drawn in a shoujo, a sort of 80s shoujo style, which I find very funny.
Mm-hmm.
They don't really attempt to, like, you know, the Johnny Depp character doesn't really look like Johnny Depp. They didn't really go for it in that regard, but they are all very...
Yeah, that was going to be my next question. Like, did they go for accuracy? But it sounds like they didn't.
Not in that way. No. But they are very romantic. They're all romantically portrayed.
Sure.
And you get all, I mean, again, they're all abridged, but you get all the fun scenes, you know? You get the girl at the beginning floating into the air and exploding like a bag of tomatoes. You get the scene where the claw comes out of the bathtub.
Iconic.
You get the fountain of blood. You get the boiler room looks great, you know? It's only one panel, but it looks great. I think the biggest change they made is they make it very explicit in this version that, and obviously in Freddy lore, the parents of the murdered children in Elm Street kill Freddy by setting him on fire.
Which is a bit extreme.
It's intense. It's pretty intense. In this version, it's not a huge change, but they make it explicit that it was only the moms?
Huh.
Huh.
Yeah, I wonder why.
What a strange addition.
Well, I guess I gotta follow up. Do they still describe Freddy as a child murderer in this one?
Oh, absolutely. Yes, he is very much a child murderer.
Because if you remember, they in the the 2011 soft reboot with Rorschach playing Freddy.
Yes, yes.
They make it much more explicit that he was a child molester, which everyone kind of thought. Well, which is always what I assumed Freddy was what they meant by calling him a child murderer in the original. But I guess laying it out like that was people thought was a bit of a choice. I don't know. But in this one, they kept it as just a murderer.
He's just a murderer. I would say I don't really like that remake anyway, but like, it is a goofy series. It's a real goof-em-up. I mean, my God. Warriors is insanely good. It's a cartoon.
Literally the section where he kills somebody by turning them into a comic book.
Yes. You don't really need to add like child rapist on top of that. It kind of brings the whole mood down.
Distract. No, I get where you're coming from.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, it's like sometimes a fun horror movie like suddenly takes a turn and you're like, oh, I didn't need that.
Well, so yes, I'm glad that they decided to keep it, you know, light and family friendly with the child murder instead of the other thing.
Child murder is better. It's just better. It's cleaner, as they say. But it's fun. It's a fun little read. I'm adding it to my edition of manga adaptations of movies along with the Jurassic Park one. I'm slowly racking those up.
Oh, man, I love that Jurassic Park manga.
It's great. I'm going to continue looking for more. I know there's some good ones out there.
There's got to be some good ones. Like, what do you think a really good one would be?
RoboCop,
sure. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, if we want to be on the nose about it, I think that if they did a tie-in in the 1980s, if they had done a tie-in for the Japanese release of Blade Runner, that would be an all-time top find.
Sure. Pretty easy to find things that are just ripping off Blade Runner like crazy. We're kind of drowning in it, but having the original would be kind of fun.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. You know, go in the opposite direction. I'm always on the lookout, you know, the Eternal Hunt for the manga adaptation of The Sound of Music. I know it's out there.
Yeah. Well, this comes in. I think we talked about this when we talked about Beck Mongolia Chop Squad, but I really do find manga about making music to really be unfortunate. It's sort of like my beef with cooking shows where you can't hear the music. So what are we doing here?
What are we doing here, folks?
Yeah, in these cooking shows, it's like I'm just supposed to take your word that
it tastes and smells good.
Yeah, your Cajun seasoned chicken tenders are just great, huh? Okay, sure. I've got one more I want to talk about because this one was pretty brief.
Okay.
I also read, well, obviously I read a bunch of stuff, but I actually finished one that had like an entire story within 30 chapters, which is pretty rare.
Whoa.
Usually when something hits 30 chapters, it's just canceled and there's no ending. But this one wrapped it up. It obviously did get canceled.
I mean, that is the natural life cycle.
Yeah, it very obviously did get canceled, but they kind of managed to put a button on it, which I appreciated. This one is called Casino Gugui. Gui? Gui.
Gugui.
Gui?
Gugui.
G-U-I.
Gui.
Gui. Gui.
Gui.
I'm not sure how that's supposed to be pronounced.
Like Guido. I can say that, but you can't.
Casino Gui. This one I read because it was in a recent roundup of like, you know, I'm always on the lookout for death games. You know, I've read so many of them. It's harder to find good ones. And this one had a sort of kaiji feel to it from the description and some of the art.
High stakes gambling.
Yeah, I consider gambling manga to, they tend to overlap with death games a lot. So I did dive in. And there is an interesting spin to this. It is pretty much what you'd expect, you know, high stakes gambling. There's a Yakuza angle on it. So there is definitely the threat of death constantly hanging over the main character.
Sure.
But the big twist in this one is that he's a dealer.
Like a blackjack dealer?
Well, the main game for some reason is Baccarat. Do you know Baccarat?
I know Burt Baccarat.
Yeah, well, close. Pretty close. Baccarat is a really weird game because it's almost exclusively played by the dealer. The players essentially choose either bet on the player or the dealer each round, and then the dealer plays the game for the players. It's a weird game.
Yeah, well, okay, this is actually a bit of a tangent, but weirdly relevant. I was recently spent the weekend in Seattle, and at the hotel that I stayed at, it, you know, on the local cable on TV, they kept playing a commercial for some local casino in Tacoma, and in the commercial they were specifically advertising that they have Baccarat tables, but they kept pronouncing it Baccarat.
Like Bokura.
Yeah.
Bokura no Kiseki.
I thought that was really weird. I'd never heard it pronounced that way. I always thought it was Baccarat.
Yeah, Baccarat. Baccarat.
Yeah.
I don't know where it comes from, so I always assumed it was French.
I would also blame the French.
Let's see. I'm actually curious here. Maybe no, it's... Oh, God. It's fucking Italian. Oh. Of course it's Italian.
Another one for the plumbers.
Oh, no. Yeah, because Baccarat is Italian for zero. I see. Okay.
Okay. All right.
How unfortunate. How unfortunate for everybody involved. It's a weird game, and it's a good game for this because, like I said, the emphasis is on the dealer. And so a lot of the manga is about this guy basically learning how to cheat as the dealer in every game possible, but especially Baccarat, because he has been suckered into a Yakuza revenge plot that revolves around an incredibly high stakes game of Baccarat.
I hate it when that happens.
Yeah, it sucks. And he's a very compelling character. I like him a lot. The art is fantastic. Like way, way better than it needed to be. It's drawn by Yoshida Shiro, who has done nothing else I've read, but I will probably follow up. And the story, like I said, is pretty generic. It's a thriller about gambling and Yakuza. You know what you're getting into.
Well, fair enough.
Yeah.
I mean, does it take itself super seriously? Obviously, Yakuza gambling, there's got to be some tension there. But, you know, Kaiji has fun with it. You know, they make up for those weird noses that they draw on Kaiji.
Oh, sure.
Like, what does this have going for it?
It's fairly...
Do they have big noses?
They don't have big noses. No, the art is... It's slick. The art takes itself pretty seriously. It is a very good-looking manga. It errs on the more realistic side of manga, if that isn't even a thing. But it's the kind of manga where characters have distinctive faces. You know what I mean?
Which is something that is apparently hard to pull off, I'm told.
Yeah,
it doesn't feel like it should be. But you know, then again, I have been watching anime for going on like 40 years now.
I would say yes. It is rare to find a manga and an anime where characters are really distinct looking. Like they have different jaws.
Well, it was one of the things that we highlighted about Dungeon Meshi when we were talking about Ryoko Kui's art, right?
Yes, she is fantastic at actually drawing distinct faces.
It's one of my favorite things about her style, so I love to see it when it happens.
Yes. Yeah, so if you're interested in distinctive-looking faces, this might be the manga for you, because, hoo boy, there sure are a lot of different face types. okay, yeah, that's pretty much the roundup of what I've been reading.
All right.
You want to take a break real quick?
Yeah, let's take a break, and then I'll come back with some of my old shit.
Oh, yay.
Thank you.
Well, continuing our desperate need to avert our gaze from the present and the future, which frankly terrifies us, we are going to look back, I think. We've already talked about the 60s, the 70s, the 80s, and an indeterminate time where gambling rules never really get in a year in Casino Gui. But since I read some old-ass manga, you decided to watch old-ass anime?
I know. I did some historical research, some archival readings, if you will.
Wow.
And I came out with a couple things that I want to talk about. I mean, it started off with me just kind of doing my own version of doom scrolling, but with anime, watching some of my old favorites. I went back and rewatched the Blackjack 90s OVA again, I won't spend too much time on it. I will just say go watch it because it is like absolutely insane, especially considering that it is in like a grim, dark adaptation of a Tezuka manga that is frankly quite lighthearted for the most part.
Yeah, but there have been, I mean, we are in an age of like dark and gritty Tezuka adaptations. I mean, we're talking about Pluto.
Oh,
we're talking
sure.
about that Dororo that was mm-hmm. on Amazon. Actually, a few different dark, gritty adaptations of Dororo recently. We're having a moment.
Well, this one started it all, and I just want to give a quick recommendation. Go, if you're going to watch any one episode, go watch the episode where he performs open heart surgery on Fidel Castro. I love that one. It's so great.
yeah.
And then that...
They are great. They're fantastic.
They're really good. And then I went and rewatched an older movie that I think that I've mentioned once or twice on here before called Dark Side Blues, which is an adaptation of a short-lived, light novel series from the 80s.
Did they have light novels back then?
I don't know if they were called light novels, but they were pulp sci-fi serials. So
sure.
whatever you want to call it.
Dime store novels.
Yeah.
Airport paperbacks.
Yeah. Yeah. They got adapted into a late 80s manga and then adapted into a 1994 movie about a dystopian future where the planet is ruled by a demon family of corpo kleptocrats. And the main resistance group, in an attempt to sabotage the bunker satellite station of the ruling elite, accidentally set free an eldritch god who, like, comes down and is like, wow, fuck fascism and demons. I'm gonna fuck all these guys up.
Take notes, people.
Yeah. It's a fun one, and I just want to say I forgot that the evil demon corporation in the movie is called PC Corp, which I think is
Hell
very
yeah.
funny.
That's essentially Microsoft, right?
Yeah. We gotta kill the PCs.
It is related to Demon City Shinjuku, right?
It's,
I think there's a connection.
Related thematically, is there? That's the first time I've heard of it.
I think there might be some kind of canonical link between those, but it's been a while since I watched either of them.
I should rewatch Demon City Shinjuku.
It's cool. It makes no sense, but it's cool.
There's Spider Lady, right? That's cool.
Oh, yeah. There's all kinds of crazy
ladies. She's got weird, creepy limbs and everything, and that guy's dressed like Harrison Ford.
Yeah, everybody's got creepy limbs in that movie. Everyone looks cool as hell.
So I rewatched those, which is stuff I'd seen before and stuff that I knew that I liked. And so I decided to go and try and find a couple of these much-lauded 80s and 90s OVA anime that everyone seems to love. You know, you always hear about how anime was so much better back in the day before it got all PC and censored.
DEI'd.
Yeah.
Which is also true and like not true at all.
Well, it is interesting seeing the cultural shift in anime back then and anime now. First of all, so much more explicitly horny and violent. And second of all, they were not allowed to, or they were not afraid of having characters like openly flirt with each other with the explicit like intention of romantic interaction.
Yeah, because they were riffing on like 70s and 80s like Hollywood action movies, which used to be sort of for adults. Now they are not.
Yeah. So the first thing that I want to talk about is the one that I really liked. And that was a fun little series, 3-episode series called Gunsmith Cats.
Oh, yes.
And by the way, here, how's this for a connection?
Oh, shit.
The director, Takashi Mori of Gunsmith Cats. Guess what he also worked on back in 1992?
I want to say Gunsmith Dogs.
No. Giant Robo, the animation.
Giant Robo, baby.
Yeah.
That's right.
So
it all comes back.
It's all connected.
All back to Giant Robo.
And so Gunsmith Cats takes place in the 1980s dystopian future of Chicago, Illinois.
Oh, this is sort of like that manga I read about how Detroit in the 2010s is essentially open slave market.
Yeah, it's not quite that extreme. No, the premise centers around our two main characters, two go-getting young women named Rally and Minnie, I think are their names, if I'm remembering correctly. And they're all about big guns and fast cars and dark shades.
That's Chicago.
Yeah. And they own a combination gun store / bounty hunting business. Again, in the middle of Chicago, where they specialize in hunting down, bail skippers and the illegal bad gun.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
The bad
Yeah,
ones.
They specialize in hunting down gun smugglers because they run a legitimate gun selling business.
I do have to say this is a bit unfortunate because obviously Chicago was the birthplace of the Pinkertons. So, a little bit of a collar tug.
So I really like this. Okay, we were dunking on Sakamoto Days and John Wick and all that, but this is very much in that vein where John Wick was kind of like this Neo?
Morpheus?
John Wick is kind of like a modernized throwback to those 80s action movies, right? You know, it's basically the plot of Clint Eastwood's Unforgiven,
yeah,
but with gun fu instead of cowboys,
right?
And so this is kind of in that vein of highly choreographed gun fu kind of gun kata fights, but sub out John Wick for, you know, a couple of anime girls.
Yeah,
so I feel like that's pretty self-explanatory.
Marked improvement.
I really enjoyed it because it spent a lot of time animating and choreographing some pretty impressive gunfights, not to mention the extreme detail to cars in that show.
Mm-hmm.
Stood out very much to me. They drive an impeccably drawn 1980s Shelby GT500. Very nice car.
Really?
Yeah.
That's so funny. It's also hell to drive in Chicago, which makes it even funnier.
And so the first episode basically centers around them getting blackmailed by the ATF into participating in a gun smuggling sting on a gun runner that they had previously taken down and had a grudge against them. The whole thing basically, and this kind of applies for the other episodes, you know, they get into these situations. We have Rally, who seems to be the leader of the pair, who's very good with guns, impeccable shot. She does the like the John Wick thing where she can pick up a gun and know everything about it just by feeling it, you know?
Oh, sure. Yeah.
That's kind of her deal. And then we have her partner, Minnie, who is the short, loudmouth explosives expert.
Definitely
obvious pairing. And so they usually get into these situations where they have to have a shootout with criminals, gun runners and whatnot, which, by the way, this is very much ascribing to the philosophy that guns are kind of like this intangible superpower where they just kind of flash and then people fall down.
Wait, what?
It is for the most part completely bloodless, which is one thing that kind of stood out to me. These really highly animated, super intense gunfights, and then no blood anywhere.
That's a little strange.
It is a little strange, considering that's one of the things people are always saying that they like about these older, like 80s and 90s anime. Right? Is there used to be a strong through line of hyperviolence in a lot of these, you know, shock value.
Yeah, they were like slasher films.
Yeah. So that kind of stood out to me as weird. But moving past that, you know, Rally will get into these big gunfights, and then Minnie comes in at the end. And I guess it's supposed to be kind of like a running gag where every fight gets resolved by her running into the middle of everything and just throwing a bunch of grenades and blowing up the whole building. And then that just ends it.
Yeah, that'll do it.
Yeah, no, that'll do it.
Just exploding everybody.
Yeah. Anyway, I thought this was fun. You know, check it out. I do very much like that they set up an explicitly antagonistic relationship between these two and the ATF that is trying to like blackmail them into doing their dirty work.
Yeah.
You know, because despite being some of the good gun merchants, they still sell below board stuff.
Sure, automatic weaponry to 16-year-olds.
Oh, that's just the start of it.
And of course, this one fits nicely between Cutie Honey and Dirty Pair in the manga history.
Very much, I'm not going to say derivative, but in the same vein as those two. You know, you have your cute anime girl duo doing cool gun stuff.
Yeah.
So that was one. And then the other thing that I watched, which I don't even know how I ended up on this. It just came up when I was searching for 80s OVA. And I doubt anyone has heard of this. It's an OVA for a anime adaptation of a, I guess, semi long running, you know, 5 to 6 volumes, I guess, manga in the 80s called Outlanders. Have you heard of this?
Yes, this is the one that inspired the Jim Caviezel movie.
Yeah, yes, exactly.
Yeah.
Everybody loves Jesus. This is, I can say, extremely derivative, specifically of Urusei Yatsura. And, you know, I'll get into it, but essentially this is a 51-minute long anime OVA extended episode. They don't call it an anime movie. They called it an OVA episode, which it was just the one. There was never any follow-up. It's a complete story.
Sure.
About a alien princess who comes to Earth.
Naturally.
Specifically to find a fiancé so that her warlike father, who is the ruler of the aliens, doesn't invade Earth and kill all the people. Sound familiar?
You know what? I think I've heard something like that before.
it was really, like, the whole time, it was just done, like, it just dawned on me, like, oh, this is exactly the plot of Urusei Yatsura. They're barely making any changes.
Do they look similar, the sexy alien ladies?
Yeah, no, they do look extremely similar. They even have horns.
Wow.
Yeah.
Damn, just going
except
there.
Except this alien princess has two little curvy horns on the side of her head instead of two little nubby horns on the top of her
head. I love my curvy-horned alien princess.
So I don't know. It's very much the opposite of Gunsmith Cats in that hyper-violent sense that I was talking about. Yeah, I think that's what actually kind of soured the whole tone for me, is that the entire time I'm comparing it in my head to Urusei Yatsura, which is a fun, you know, lighthearted, romantic comedy, you know, 80s, I don't know, what do you call it, a tableau?
Sure, a fun, goofy Rumiko Takahashi story.
Yeah, and then this one, Outlanders, is trying to do that, but also inserting, like, lots of nudity. I'll say that outright. They do not dance around it.
Definitely.
And lots of hyper-violent blood. You know, this character, the princess character, Princess Calm is her name, is introduced by beaming down to Earth and immediately slaughtering all of the armies of the world.
Holy shit. All of them?
Yeah, every single one. And they go into detail. She's cutting off limbs. She's cutting off heads. They're doing Kill Bill fountains and shit.
Whoa, it sounds like Babel 2.
Yeah, it's a little, it could be. maybe there's a connection there.
Interesting.
And until she runs into, as is so common in manga rom-com and anime rom-com, just the most boring 19-year-old Japanese dude who has nothing going on for him. And I guess that what makes her so attracted to him at the beginning is that instead of running away like all of the cowards that comprise the armies of the earth,
yeah,
he's a photographer and he wanted to take her picture, and that made her feel special.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah.
Love taking creep shots of aliens.
She's like, all right, well, I guess you're my husband now. Let's go back to my planet and meet my dad.
This is such a, like, 1950s, like, sci-fi adventure story, you know? Yeah. What I mean, with, like, the Amazon women from the moon.
Well, it's, I think you're right on the money with that one, because it's more or less just a pretty standard story about a headstrong woman who doesn't want to be in an arranged marriage, and so she goes off and finds the first loser that she hits it off with, to be like, no, you can't marry me off, Dad. This is my husband.
Oh, boy.
So they go back, and her king alien father is like, no, you can't marry him. I'm going to have him executed. And she's like, no, don't do that. And then they escape together. They do kind of a riff on the Acura floating bike chase scene in the sewer. You remember that?
Yeah, of course. Which was a riff on the speeder bike chase in Star Wars.
Yeah, yeah, they do that. And then they get back to the ship, and then her best alien friend, who is also a sexy alien princess warrior lady.
Nice.
Is like, don't worry, I'll hold off the army while you guys escape. And then they escape, and then that's the end. 47 minutes with 5 minutes of credits.
Cool.
Yeah.
Where do they escape to?
Back to Earth, which I guess I forgot to mention. This is like the one interesting piece of lore building they throw into the entire story and never follow up on. They say that, like, the reason she went to Earth to look for a fiance is because Earth is their holy planet. And the only reason...
What does that mean?
Well, we don't know. But apparently the only reason humans live there is because humans are actually, like, the ancient descendants of their rival alien race who stole the holy planet from them.
Oh, shit. They're an invasive species?
Basically, yeah.
Okay. That's why it's okay to slaughter them in mass.
Yeah. No, I
all think, right.
Yeah. And, oh,
and... This sounds like, honestly, this sounds like Prometheus.
A little bit. You know, especially with the father issue angle.
Yeah, no kidding.
Why did you create me, Dad? I'm going to my room. I guess that's about it. The only thing that I want to throw in is that for some reason that I'm not entirely sure, all of the aliens are Italian coded in their naming conventions.
What?
Yeah, yeah. Like the alien
Giuseppe?
Planet. Well, so one of the aliens that's on her side, By the way, I guess for some reason, some of the aliens are just like animal people, but by which I mean the women are cat girls, and then the men are like, I don't know, werewolves, I guess. They don't follow up on that. That's just how it is.
They're furries. There's just some furries mixed in.
Yeah, Italian furries. Specifically, her best friend that helps them escape. Her name is Batia, and and her boyfriend, her wolf boyfriend's name is Geobaldi.
Geobaldi.
Yeah.
Wow.
And they come from the planet San Azimia.
Do they have like Italian themed cities or costumes or anything? Is it just the names?
No, they wear like metal bikinis.
Oh, well, that's, you know, Italians are obviously metal bikini enthusiasts.
Sure.
You know, outside of Rome, it's all metal bikinis. People don't know that.
So honestly, this one was not as much fun as Gunsmith Cats was. It was definitely nowhere near as well animated. It did have that, you know, nice 80s quality of having really nice painted backgrounds, especially like the big space shots showing their giant weird looking like insectoid ships going through space.
Oh, hell yeah.
I don't know. Trying to think of a good comparison. Kind of like they were very obviously riffing off of the monster design from Nausicaa. You know, kind of like these weird insectoid spiky kind of concoctions, but
yeah,
giant spaceships. I'm sure there was definitely some like House Harkonnen and Dune flair thrown in there.
Also Italian coded.
Yeah, you can't put that one on us. We're not that greasy. We're not literally covered in crude oil.
Yeah, all greased up, all gooey.
I don't know. It was, I guess it just kind of highlights what makes the same premise in Urusei Yatsura work so much more is that A, it has a little bit of tact, and I know that's weird talking about Urusei Yatsura, but
yeah,
it knows when to hold back. In certain aspects, it's not so in your face, horny and bloody. And then also it gives, like, it's a whole ass series, like four seasons of a series, and it gives its characters stuff like room to grow and know each other and build rapport with each other and have character arcs.
Yeah, kind of.
Which you cannot do in 47 minutes, not efficiently, at least not in this format, it seems. Because the guy literally gets kidnapped and she's like, all right, you're my husband now. And he's like, all right, score. Screw Earth. I get to be an alien prince.
This fucking rules. Hell yeah. I don't need to change.
Between the two, go watch Gunsmith Cats. That's my takeaway on this.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Or Outlanders.
Or Outlanders.
Or wait, that one's just Outlander. Excuse me.
Outlander.
That, you know, Jim Caviezel aside, I do like Outlander. That shit rules.
Wait, is Outlander the one about the time-traveling Scotsman?
No, that's the romance series, but is also better than this, it sounds like.
Yeah.
No, Outlander is the Jim Caviezel, humans are space aliens, and he accidentally lands on Earth during Viking times, and he has to learn how to live as a Viking, but also there's dragons, and he has to fight dragons without using his alien tech.
It's an isekai.
Yeah, it kind of is. Well, it's a reverse isekai because he comes to Earth. Welcome to Earth. It's wild. It's a wild
there's
one.
Just there's human aliens and then there's Earth humans.
Yeah, the human aliens are sort of like space colonizers, but they haven't found Earth yet. And he goes off course in one of his like space colonizer jobs and crash lands there. And the only piece of tech that still works is like his gun and his translator, which is what you want, really, if you end up on a alien planet.
You know, all those country songs are always talking about how the two things you need are a gun and a translator.
Yeah. And he's like, yeah, hey, you know what, living as a Viking kicks ass. This shit rules. I'm just gonna stay here. This is fucking awesome. Oh, except all the dragons I gotta fight with my bare hands, because I can't break the Prime Directive.
This is some Westworld shit right here. Like, oh, yes. Earth's most trying, like difficult times are actually super fun vacation spots for aliens.
Yes, exactly. Which is probably true.
Alien cosplayers just down here fucking up our shit for all of history.
Yeah. You know, the thing is, like, it's very few people who believe in aliens ever consider the possibility that they look not like humans, but exactly like humans. You know?
Like, maybe they are just humans.
Like, just humans, but from a different planet.
God, what if we discovered another planet with alien life, and it turns out that they were also just humans and they had Christianity?
If they also had Christianity, that would be mind-blowing. Like, I might actually consider it. For a second, I would be like, okay, wait, hold on. Maybe they did have something. Maybe they were
We
cooking.
Land and they're like, hey, check this shit out, invaders. This is the Bible too.
You ever heard of this shit? There's a cross and a guy gets up on it. This is the real shit. And then people are like, wait, I've read that one.
This is actually a legit, very interesting premise for a sci-fi novel.
I guess Jesus was real, but like when he died here, he just went to a different planet and then they also crucified him. This guy's got bad luck.
This dude can't catch any wins. Oh God. All right. Well, that's what I've been doing.
All right.
That's my anime watching.
Yes.
I think the people have been subject enough to our backwards look into history.
Anime, it's been around for a while now. That's the only conclusion I can draw from all this.
Hey, it's kind of old. Who knew?
It's kind of old. And you know what? Some of it was better. A lot of it was worse.
Ain't that the truth?
Something to chew on.
All right, handsome, beautiful, tall listeners. Thank you again for sticking around. We love having you here. It's so good. It's really good to hear your voice. We should catch up sometime.
I don't know any of you. I don't make presumptions. Much like when celebrities die, I don't know you. I don't know them. I'm not friends with strangers. You are irrelevant to my life.
Well, Remy said his piece, but I'm all in for the parasocial relationships. Come at me. I want him.
No, you can assume everything you want about me. That's fine.
Yeah.
Please. In fact, I welcome it. Just don't accept any kind of reciprocity. That's all I'm saying.
Please go look at our TikToks. Follow us on Blue Sky. Talk to us. We'll answer. Like, we'll do it.
Yeah.
We've got nothing better to do.
Yeah, and the Instagram account is there. I haven't started posting we got a cross post, but we'll start doing that.
Yeah. Well, until next time.
Bye. Looking at the end of Nightmare on Elm Street, where Nancy defeats Freddy with the power of Christ.